Welcome back to the Labor Day edition of Talking Baseball. Bill Lasky in for Marty Lurie, and my next guest is a voice that you have heard many times, especially in the Fresno area. Let me welcome in Doug Greenwald. How are you doing today, Doug?
Bill, I'm well, and our best thoughts to all in the Fresno area and so many being affected by these fires, but I hope you and all are having a good holiday.
Yeah, one of the biggest things, Doug, that I saw, you got to go to the ballpark yesterday. I wanted to ask you that experience and how that was, especially with all the cardboard cutouts behind you. So you got to see that, and as well, you saw a good ball game at Oracle Park.
Yeah, I was fortunate to get in yesterday, and you know, the common word is it's different, and you can apply that to anything this year in any walk of life, but. You walk in and you sort of have the feel of a backfield game at spring training. You know, I don't mean in the big ballpark, but where you have the B games as they call them. It was a good game. After the first few batters, it didn't look too good for the Giants, but Johnny pitched well, and so did the bullpen. Obviously, that was huge outs that. Barrier got and held him at one run, and the Giants were able to come back.
You know, one of the things, I haven't been to the ballpark. You were in the press box, and I do believe you have to be 6 foot, 8 foot apart from each other. How did they do that for the press box?
That is correct. The initial place where I sat, I was told just to move down a few feet further. So when you go to a park and people have the gathering where they have those circles that are marked, and people can sit, in a circle here, and then 6 feet from there, there's another circle and people can sit there. Similar to the press box, you just don't sit on the floor. There's orange tape, and you have two strands of orange tape that are placed every 6 feet. I sit here, and then 6 feet down from me, there's another little area that has two strands of orange tape, and that's where the next seat is, and so on. So, yeah, you are definitely spread out. And it's one of those where normally when I go to a game, Bill, I always like to get there 2 hours ahead of time because it gives me a chance to catch up with broadcasters and writers and scouts and the media relations department, and you never know who you're going to run into at the ball game. And then before you know it, those 2 hours go quick and it's time to play ball. There was no need for that. Yesterday, you show up a half hour ahead of time because there's not many people there with whom to speak.
Well, knowing you as I do, you are an overachiever, and those are the things that, of course, your dad taught you, Hank Greenwald. And I kind of want to delve into him a little bit and some of the things that he did in the organization for many years. Of course, I saw you running around the clubhouse in your younger days when Hank would be doing radio and TV. And some of the great things that Hank did were a lot of his broadcast one-liners, just his passion for the game. And, one of the things he said that I always remember was, three more saves, he ties John the Baptist. That was one of the key ones that I just love to hear. Tell me some of your thoughts about your dad when he'd say these slogans and different things to the audience, and what did you think about it?
Well, people ask about that, and Dad would say things on the air. So you'd have the things he'd say publicly, the common fan or the fan would hear, and he would often use those same lines at home. I mean, about three more saves or whatever. But I mean, he would, have a lot of one-line quips at the house. So he was often the same guy on the radio and even off the radio. And I could have pictured Dad and Bill. You were right there in the 1980s and playing in front of not too many folks at Candlestick. I could have pictured Dad going to the game yesterday, walking in and saying, "Hey, it's about the same amount of people that showed up at Candlestick as they show up this year for games." So he probably would have had some fun with that. But, I think it's just one of those where he incorporates the humor. He would bring the humor home, but he wouldn't bring the wins or losses home because he would say, as a broadcaster, sure, you want to see your team win all the time, but he doesn't have control over that. But he has control over things he can say on or off the radio, and And he would bring, as I say, that same sense of humor that came out on the air, he would share at the dinner table.
2,798 consecutive broadcasts in a 16-season career. 27 years. He started October 1989, or I should say 27 years, until he got to see the Giants win a National League pennant in October 1989. That was his real big highlight. He enjoyed that. I mean, he was covering a lot of terrible baseball, but one of the things he always said is, you can watch a bad game, but there's no excuse for a bad broadcast. And I tell you what, that is totally implemented with you, because I've heard you so many times on radio. And those are the things that highlight Hank Greenwald, and especially instilled with you. Tell me a little bit about that little one-liner.
Well, that's right. You can't, regardless of how good or bad the team is playing, when a fan turns on the radio, that's their escape to get out of their, whatever their routine is. Just like you go to the ballpark, you want to have an enjoyable nine innings. Yeah, your team might not win every game, and your team might not be any good. But you like going to the ballpark just as you like turning on the radio. And the fan at home, or wherever the fan is listening, they don't want to hear if you're having a bad day, you don't bring your bad day onto the radio. They want to hear baseball. They want to hear some humor. They want to hear stories. And you cannot let... it's right. You can't allow the game on the field affect you on the air. And my dad would say, you don't have control of what goes on the field, but you have control of how good the broadcast can be. And I think that was one of the staples of my dad, because he covered a lot of bad teams, or long years, or whatever you want to call it. And that definitely was the highlight. That was the only playoff team he ever covered in the 16 years. And that was the ultimate right there when the Giants won the pennant in 1989. That's absolutely right. You do have control over the broadcast, and there might be a bad team, but you don't want to have a bad broadcast, because that just brings everybody down. And then, your job as a broadcaster is to get people to the ballpark. It's to get people to, if they're not at the ballpark that day, is to get them to the ballpark in the future. And if you sound downtrodden, they're not going to want to come out.
We're speaking to Doug Greenwald on a Labor Day pregame show. It's Bill Lasky sitting in for Marty Lurie. We're talking about his dad, Hank Greenwald. August 27th, 1996, he retired. He walked away from it. And his phrase was, I'd like to tell people that I finally found something I'm really good at, and that's retirement. How was that in the Greenwald house where it was over, he was done? How did that translate to you, and especially my favorite, your sister Kelly, and your mom Carla? Tell us a little bit about how that prevailed in your home.
Well, Mom was upset about it because now he'd be home all the time. he had had an... I think with my dad, though, I had to... I guess with my mom, I think she, I think she'd like to have him work a little longer. I think she was hoping that he might have worked up until a few more years to at least do the games at the new ballpark, which was, of course, new in 2000. But I think he had had enough just of all the travel and the grind. And as he said, he accomplished his goal of broadcasting Major League Baseball for almost two decades. And he wanted to. He saw a lot of other broadcasters never retire, or when I say never retire, meaning work until their 80s, work until their 70s. And that's not what he wanted to do. He wanted to get out in his early 60s and enjoy being able to travel in the summer or making his own schedule. My career had just started. I was 22, so I was already off doing baseball when he had retired. But still, the idea was to spend more time with his family, whether it was to come see me wherever I was working. He obviously still followed the game very closely. I mean, he retired, but sort of retired. He stayed on in 1997, and CBS Radio hired him to do the CBS Game of the Week. So he would travel once a week to wherever it might be. I mean, New York, Pittsburgh, you name it, and still do maybe 25 games because he still loved baseball and he still wanted to have his hand in it a little bit. But for the most part, he could call his own schedule. And it was just, strange, I think, for my mom to have him home. Again, I was already out of the house by then. But it's something that I certainly could share this now, but that he had told us all along in 1996 that he was going to retire. He just was going to go out and announce it toward the end of the season.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. He did it in Colorado, and they gave him a standing ovation and read a nice article about it. And he kind of waved to him, and he got right back into the game, and that was Hank for sure. But let's get into you a little bit, Doug. No baseball for Fresno this past summer. And you were sitting home kind of figuring it out. How hard was that for you?
It's strange. I mean, today would have been the last day of the season or, the last day of the regular season for the minor leagues. And, I'm seeing a lot of postings and all over the Internet saying, today would have been such and such last game of the year and where did the season go? And, the season is always a blur. I always say, Bill, the first pitch of the season, is outside ball one, and folks, that was the first pitch of the season. Before you know it, it's going to be the last pitch of the season, so don't let the summer go by. Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, that's what happened this year with all of us broadcasters in the minor leagues. I remember April 9th was going to be opening night, and we all sent each other texts saying, hey, happy opening night, and now the season's flown by, different. Normally, I would have liked to have, if I wasn't going to have a season this year, I would like to have traveled and just get out and see the country. But, based on all that's going on right now with this pandemic, I just didn't feel safe doing that. So I was home with my mom and sister here in the city. And just, I think it would have been an emptier feeling if everybody else had been working and I had, but all of us minor league broadcasters are all in the same boat, so it wasn't like I was left out of anything.
One of the hardest things we all do is everybody loves to travel, and you travel a lot, especially through the AAA season. And then in your off season, you're traveling all over the United States, some great cities, and you post a lot on Twitter and Facebook. And, those are the things you enjoy doing. And to take that back from you, too, is definitely, back at home, kind of chilling out with mom and sis and just trying to figure out what's next. And that's going to be the question I ask you. What do you think's going to happen to minor league baseball 2021?
If you gave me a blank piece of paper, Bill, that's all I know about next year with minor league baseball. Nobody does. I mean, it appears that Major League Baseball is going to run it from now on. I mean, I have no inside knowledge of these backroom talks in New York or where they're taking place, but just the vibe I get and many others feel that very sadly there's going to be no more what is called the Minor League Baseball Corporation, or MILB, out of St. Petersburg, Florida. I think MLB is going to take things over, and they can just assign affiliates wherever now. There might not be anything called the Pacific Coast League or International League anymore. I mean, you grew up going to International League games. I know that's your roots in Toledo. I mean, the Mudhens, have been part of the International League since the 1800s. And, you go back to the Pacific Coast League where the Oakland Oaks and San Francisco Seals were, and regardless of all the changes and new cities that have come around in all these years, it was always called the Pacific Coast League. That might not happen anymore. It might just be called AAA West, it could go to three leagues. It could be AAA Central, AAA E. I mean, again, I have no idea, but MLB takes it over. They could just say, okay, we're going to, we're going to assign, this team to have their single A team in this city. And it might not have always been a single A city, but they can do whatever they want. So nobody has any idea what's going to happen. I was down in Fresno a few weeks ago, and I was talking to one of our VPs down there, and he says our administration doesn't know. Fresno, we could be in single A next year. We could be in triple A next year, but nobody knows. So,
when you start thinking about things like that, the minor leagues have just taken a hit this summer. I mean, a lot of the cities have lost so much income, their employees, and it's just going to be a desolate winter again with all these clubs. And I look on the opposite side for the players and the talent and how many guys didn't even play this whole summer. And it really, you lose 1 year of service time, 1 year of your baseball knowledge and your talent. And, you know, that's something that I want to talk to you about. How do you think this is going to affect, especially the middle of the road guys that are really fighting to try to get back to the big leagues?
Well, I'll go back to what you first said. A lot of these teams, you know, there's a list of about 40 teams that are going to be contracted, and that's mostly going to be the short season teams in the Pioneer League and teams that have had cities that have had teams forever, the Billings Montanas of the world and the Great Falls Montanas and you know, these, you know, Elizabethton, Tennessee, and places like that, Johnson City, Tennessee, where the roots of summertime, where, you know, people have a chance to go and take tickets and make some money, and where so it's not just the teams that are being eliminated, it's the cities that are going to lose affiliated baseball. But there's going to be some teams that weren't scheduled to be contracted that might just not survive because of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So some full-season teams that might not survive either. But, yeah, you talk about the players right now. I mean, you only have a limited number of people at your alternate site. That hurts them immensely because, you know, it's one less year of development. And you don't know if you're going to have any sort of fall league or instructional league now, but you see some guys that are maybe called up to the big leagues that wouldn't be up here this year but are up there – might not be quite as ready yet because they haven't had the proper development where they're playing, you know, they're only playing each other. They're not playing other teams. And, you know, there's no doubt. And, you know, some teams aren't even paying their minor leaguers this year. They're saying, well, why don't you pay them if there's no games, which is not really fair to them, but fair to the players. But, no, it's financially, developmental-wise, it's a massive disappointment, no doubt about it. And most of the minor league teams, a lot of my fellow broadcasters have had to be laid off because there's no work. The ticket takers, the assistant GMs, a lot of people behind the scenes, groundskeepers that depend on income, depend on baseball in their minor league towns that don't have it now.
Well, I know, Doug, since no minor league baseball, you have been keeping an eye on the Major League Baseball, American League, and National League, and I want to just kind of throw a couple thoughts to you here while we finish up. The San Diego Padres sure put a big push for the National League West, along with the L.A. Dodgers. How do you feel with both of those teams moving forward in the NL West, and they've really put a space between Colorado, San Francisco, and Arizona? Your thoughts on that?
I think a lot of people thought those would be the top two teams anyway, even if there was a 162-game season. The Dodgers didn't really have to make many moves. In fact, they traded Ross Stripling because there just wasn't going to be enough innings for him because they are so stacked right now. So you normally wouldn't see a team who's in first place being a seller, but the Dodgers,
yeah.
But the Dodgers were, because they didn't really need to improve much. They were sort of like, hey, we don't need Ross Stripling. We're so stacked. So Blue Jays, you can take them. And the Padres, I mean, hey, they're going for it. I think a lot of people thought this was going to be the year that San Diego was going to make the push. And I define year as over the course of 162 because they had the pieces there with Tatis and Machado and Hosmer. But, I mean, to go out, build, and they're sending a message that, hey, we're right there toward the top, but we're going to go out and we're going to change our roster and changing 25% of our roster. So, yeah, we have Hosmer at first base, and Chenoweth's had a good, Cronenworth has had a good rookie year. He mm-hmm. can play some first, but we're going to go at Mitch Moreland also. And Kirby Yates is out, so we're going to get Trevor Rosenthal, and we're going to revamp our catchers and get a couple of guys in Nola and Castro. And, yeah, we could use some more help. We have a young rotation, but we're going to go and stay younger and still get a good young pitcher in Mike Clevenger, too. So the Padres are sending a message to the Dodgers and to the rest of the league that yeah, we're not here to hang around. We're here to win it and do something that San Diego's never done in its existence and winning World Series.
Well, I tell you, it's going to be interesting to see how this format's going to work with eight teams on each division in American League and National League to get to the World Series and the bubble they're talking about in Texas as well as in California. So we'll definitely see all this as it translates into the postseason. Doug Greenwell, I'd like to thank you for taking some time on Labor Day to join me on Talking Baseball. Please say hello to your sister Kelly and your mom Carla for me. And you take care, my friend, and enjoy a nice Labor Day today as well as the week ahead.
You too. Have a good holiday to you and your family and everybody out there. And Go Giants. Should be an exciting September. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it. All right. We're going to be right back on Talking Baseball. Bill Lasky in for Marty Lurie right here on KNBR, the sports leader.